Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. Today is June 22nd, 2026. I am on the road with family right now, hence the different background here and the off-color coffee mug that I'm sure none of you were expecting. But our top story this morning, we must press on. Top story this morning is oil. By the way, guys, whenever I'm on the road and I'm using the mobile setup, I always wonder about the audio and things like that. If we're having any technical issues, I apologize. The show must go on. Traffic in the Strait of Hormuz, it is up, but it's down from where it was before when it was up. I know that's a lot to take in, but it was a very volatile weekend with these on again, off again discussions, MOUs, agreements, deals, whatever you want to call them, involving the Strait of Hormuz. So last week, we had a big surge in tanker traffic through the Strait after the memorandum of understanding was signed between the U.S. and Iran. Then over the weekend, we hit some very predictable snags. The Iranians walked out of negotiations and announced that the Strait was once again closed because Israel and Lebanon and Hezbollah and everything's going on there. Two countries that I would add were not signatories of this memorandum of understanding. So traffic dropped again. And oil prices were a little bit higher last night. Then this morning, we all wake up and both sides, the Iranians and the U.S., are touting progress made during all-nighter negotiations yesterday. So what do we have? We had last week, tanker traffic went from single digits up to about 20 per day. Actually, on Saturday, 21 tankers transited the Strait of Hormuz. That 21 is a mix of both global tankers and Iranian tankers. They're being let in on both sides now. On Sunday, after the Iranians threw their fit, the tanker traffic dropped down to 12. And to put that in perspective, before the war, tanker traffic was about 100 ships per day. So we're still way, way down from where we were pre-crisis. We rose to about a fifth of that level. Now we're back down to about 10% of that level. But both sides are once again touting progress. Get used to this, guys. We're going to have this back and forth probably for the next 60 days at least, assuming they don't just renew for another 60 days over and over again like they did with the tariffs. We're going to have a lot of brinksmanship. We're going to have a lot of very volatile sound bites. Oh, we'll go back to bombing and we'll do this and the infidels will burn in the fires or whatever. Like all this other crap. Yeah, expect that, guys. At the end of the day, you've got more oil getting out of the Strait than was a week ago, but not as much as it could be. But again, both sides touting progress this morning, and so oil prices have come back down. Now, we've got some other energy-related news here. We got this post from Javier Blas on X. Chinese oil imports fell again in June. They fell substantially, 5.3 million barrels per day of total oil imports for the Chinese, according to their latest data. That's down from about 11.5 million barrels per day before this war broke out. That's significant, guys. We're looking at like 6 million barrels per day of less imports the Chinese have been buying, which was largely Iranian crude that the Chinese were buying before the war started. That's versus a 20 million barrel per day disruption that the Strait had. And then, you know, like another 7 million barrels got out via that east-west pipeline to the Red Sea. And then, of course, the West was dumping their reserves. But the Chinese ate a big chunk of that oil disruption. That's notably different from what happened in 2022 after the Russian invasion of Ukraine when the U.S. dumped the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. The Chinese actually increased their imports and bought up a lot of that oil. This time around, it more affected the Chinese because most of that Middle Eastern oil was going to China and to that region, the Southeast Asian and Pacific region. It was their supply that was disrupted. And so they heavily tapped those reserves right up until, you know, over these last couple of weeks. So as some of this Iranian oil reaches market, you could expect the Chinese will very quickly absorb those additional exports and start dumping their own reserves a little less, which also means some of the price relief may not arrive as quickly as a lot of people are expecting. Now, we've got more energy-related news, this time on the Crimean Peninsula. We haven't talked about this a lot on this channel. It's a very sensitive subject, obviously, the war in Ukraine and Russia. There has been some serious developments around the Crimean Peninsula. The Ukrainians have launched a very effective, what's essentially a drone siege or a drone blockade of the peninsula. The Ukrainians have become incredibly adept at drone warfare, and they have been attacking what's become known as the Highway of Death. this M14 highway that runs into Crimea through some of the easternmost occupied Ukrainian territories. The Russians can't get fuel and equipment in. They've also been simultaneously attacking marine targets, energy storage facilities on the peninsula. It's gotten so bad to the point where the Russian government has just halted all civilian fuel sales on the entire peninsula. That's 2.4 million people live in Crimea. It's a little bit more than the population of the state of New Mexico. And they cannot buy any gas. Okay, we just had some technical difficulties, but we're back. Suffice this to say, 2.4 million people can't get their gas. That means they can't get to work. That means the store shelves are going to start going bare. Something is about to change in this Ukraine-Russia conflict. I don't know what that change is going to look like. You're either going to have a major escalation, or you're going to have some peace talks, or you'll have some big counteroffensive elsewhere along the front lines. But the situation right now in Crimea is untenable. And if something doesn't give, there is going to be mass chaos in that peninsula. So that could potentially have global geopolitical and thus financial implications for the rest of us. Also going on this morning, again, geopolitics, but possibly very significant financial implications. Keir Starmer has resigned. He is out as the Prime Minister of the UK. This move was widely telegraphed, largely expected. Starmer has been very unpopular because of some financial promises that were made involving welfare and tax reform that never materialized. He also took a lot of heat over the appointment of an ambassador to the United States who was featured heavily in the Epstein files. He took some heat from that. And he has had a challenge has been mounted by Andy Burnham, the former mayor of Manchester, who is now a member of parliament and is expected to be the new prime minister. That is the sixth prime minister in the UK in 7 years. The UK bond market is just ripping through prime ministers right now. But interestingly enough, the UK bond market is quiet this morning. That's notable because the bond market had historically been a little intimidated by the prospect of a Burnham administration in the UK, because Burnham he's been one of those, let's just spend more money on whatever, everybody gets a pony kind of guys. And well, the bond market typically doesn't react so favorable to that, kind of the same way the bond market didn't react very favorable to conservative Liz Truss, who said, let's cut taxes and make our budget crisis worse. The bond market flipped out over that. But for now, all quiet, despite some geopolitical upheaval in the UK. We've got China is buying a whole bunch of gold, 163 tons in the month of May. That's a lot of gold. That's up about 76% year over year, the first few months of the year. And it's also the most since March of 2024. Now, as China's buying all this gold, you've got Hong Kong is also importing a lot of gold. They have this new clearing hub is starting in Hong Kong. Singapore is doing something similar. And now you've got 400-ounce bars are being imported into Hong Kong, which is interesting because typically Hong Kong deals in the kilo bars. And so the fact that they're buying 400-ounce bars means maybe they're running a little short of kilo bars. Maybe they're dealing a little more with institutional money who has the kind of liquidity needed to move 400 ounces of gold at a time. What's going on here with these two stories combined? This is the collapse of the Chinese housing market, which historically the average Chinese household has put 90% of their wealth into housing, first, second, even third homes. But since the Chinese housing market has collapsed, the average Chinese person doesn't want to invest any more there. They don't really trust the stock market in China. It's not nearly as big as it is here in the States. And so gold is the next logical place where the Chinese would move to store their wealth. And since the housing has collapsed in China, gold has become much more popular among Chinese investors. We've got Microsoft signed a 20-year power purchase deal to buy natural gas from Chevron, natural gas energy from Chevron for their Pecos, Texas data center. That is a 2.7 gigawatt facility. That is a lot of juice that they're just apparently going to manufacture out of nowhere. You do have a lot of cheap gas in the Permian Basin where typically they just flare it off because they have nowhere to pipe it to. So it does make sense, but it also highlights the power constraints of the AI bubble. On those same regards, we've got a warning from Goldman Sachs about hyperscalers running out of money to borrow, liquidity in the bond market, and you wonder why the big AI companies are all heading to the government hat in hand waiting for a bailout, even though they're all telling us they're so successful and their revenue is going up so much. Why do they need a bailout from the government then? Oh, that's right, because they all lose money. We've also got China has Oh, they put export restrictions on U.S. rare earths. This is interesting here. MP Materials and USA Rare Earth, two companies that the U.S. government has taken a stake in recently, you know, the whole sovereign wealth fund thing that's all the rage in the U.S. these days. China has just passed export controls and placed them on those companies. So the economic warfare between the two countries continues, even as China has announced that they're buying 132,000 tons of soybeans. And that's interesting, the 132,000 tons of soybeans. The fact that that's news at all goes to show you how bad things have gotten with the agriculture trade between the US and China, because the Chinese have averaged about 27 million tons of soybean purchases a year. And here we are making headlines on 132,000 being bought by the Chinese. A long way to go before we get back to normal, if ever, in the agriculture trade. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button so you can have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every business day. And right now we've got the S&P 500 is looking okay here. Let me get back to my futures here. Up 7 points, 0.1% in the green this morning. We have got the Dow is also up this morning about a quarter of a percent, 128 points to the upside. And the Nasdaq is up by about a half a percent, a little less than half a percent, 136 points in the green for the Nasdaq this morning. So stocks are looking all right here. We've got the US dollar is a little bit stronger at 100.92, higher by 7 basis points. Not a big move, but the dollar still over 100. We've had some significant strengthening of the dollar since Kevin Warsh took over at the Fed. Looking over at the bond market, the U.S. bond market, we've got yields are higher this morning. The 30-year yield is up by 3 points, almost 3.5 points, 4.935% for the 30-year. The 10-year is at 4.499, up 3.5 points, almost back to 4.5 for the 10-year yield. The 2-year is making another move here, almost 5 points higher at 4.226, and the 1 month is at 3.648. So we've got yields are a little bit higher in the U.S. bond market here, but look at the U.K. bond market. This is interesting. Yields are lower. And we're in particular, the 10-year gilt, 4.798. That is lower by 4 points in change. Not a huge move, but considering the fact that yields are red, meaning bond prices are higher, is very interesting, because we got this one. Liza Minnelli outlives. I love this Twitter feed, by the way. Liza Minnelli has outlived yet another resident of 10 Downing Street. UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer has resigned. This Twitter feed is kind of funny, by the way. UK PM Starmer resigns as Britain faces its 7th leader in 10 years. That's actually its 6th leader in 7 years, which sounds a little bit worse. UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer announced Monday that he will stand down as Labour leader and Prime Minister, ending months of political turmoil and opening a contest to replace him. The announcement follows mounting pressure on the Prime Minister after Labour suffered heavy losses in local elections in May and faced an increasingly vocal rebellion from his own lawmakers over his leadership and policy agenda. The move comes less than 2 years after Starmer led Labour to one of its largest parliamentary majorities in the 2024 general election. In a statement outside 10 Downing Street shortly after 9:30 a.m. in London, Starmer said he would remain in post until any leadership contest is completed, which he said would help ensure an orderly handover of power. Let's see. We've got the pound was last seen 0.19% lower against the dollar. The yield on 10-year U.K. government bonds known as gilts were flat early Monday. They're actually a little bit lower here. So the market is doing pretty good. Starmer and Finance Minister Rachel Reeves have been battling discontent over fiscal policy within their own ranks, while welfare reforms and the appointment of Peter Mandelson, an associate of the late sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, as U.S. ambassador further damaged intra-party relations. An Ipsos poll published on Friday suggested that 52% of the British public think Starmer should stand down as prime minister, 5 percentage points higher than in May, while just 35% thought he should continue. So Starmer is out of there. Andy Burnham appears to be, it's like 96% chance that he's the next prime minister. And so far, the UK bond market is taking it well. We'll see how long that lasts. Right now, also, we're looking at Bitcoin this morning. Bitcoin is higher by about $1,700, 65,000 even as priced on Coinbase here. I did see some stories that Strategy is buying again this morning, probably responsible for that one. Looking over at the commodities board, We've got spot gold is higher by about $30 here, $4,190 an ounce for spot gold. That's up by about 0.75%. Spot silver is at 66.56, higher by $1.61, 2.5% higher. I like this shiny. Copper is higher by 0.7%. Platinum is up 0.5%. Palladium is also up 0.5%. And crude oil is lower by 2% here. $1.55 lower at $74.30 a barrel for August WTI futures. Let's take a look at the oil chart here. These are daily candles. All right, so we've got a red candle this morning. Oil is down, but you'll notice it was higher, significantly higher, earlier, or we'll say late last night when most of us went to bed off of that back and forth political volatility between the U.S. and Iran over the weekend. Looks like oil went as high overnight as 78. Now we're back down around 74. Also noteworthy that we're sitting right above the 200-day moving average shown in red here. So that is an important technical level. Now let's talk about some of these energy headlines that we've got this morning. Let's go all the way to the top of this one. Shipping stalls in Strait of Hormuz after Iran declares key waterway closed again. And again, this is shipping stalls relative to where we were on Saturday, which was much higher than where we were, say, on Wednesday of this week. So it was up and then it was down, and now it looks like it's heading back up again. Shipping through the Strait of Hormuz stalled over the weekend, according to maritime intelligence company Windward, after Iran announced it had again closed the world's most important oil choke point. The update comes even as industry trackers showed Iranian tankers continued to sail through the strait, a narrow waterway that typically handles around 20% of the world's oil. There was a recovery in oil tanker traffic through the strait immediately after the U.S. and Iran signed a 14-point MOU last week, but the latest data shows this has already hit a snag. An analysis published by Windward found that a total of 12 ships transited the Strait of Hormuz on Sunday, down from more than 21 the previous day. 5 of 8 inbound vessels were said to be dark, which is when the ship disables its automatic identification or AIS transponder to hide its location, identity, and destination. The current traffic profile, dark, sanctioned, Iranian-linked, resembling the late blockade baseline, more than a functioning open strait, Windward said in a social media post. Trade intelligence firm Kepler said late last week that at least 20 tankers transited the Strait of Hormuz on Thursday, reflecting the highest level of traffic since June 2nd. This was far below pre-war levels when more than 100 ships transited the strait daily, including dozens of tankers. A separate analysis published Monday from maritime specialist Lloyd's List also found that commercial traffic continued through the Strait of Hormuz over the weekend, defying Iran's claims that it had closed the waterway once again. Iran on Saturday said it had shut the strategically vital strait, citing ceasefire violations after Israel continued deadly strikes in southern Lebanon. The U.S. military denied those claims, stating the waterway remained open and that Iran does not control the Strait of Hormuz. At least 15 Iran-flagged Suezmaxes and very large crude carriers were outbound from the Gulf of Oman with AIS signals active as of Saturday night. The U.S. and Iran held talks in the Swiss mountain resort on Sunday to build the memorandum of understanding both parties signed on Wednesday. Both parties were said to have made progress on reaching a final deal within 60 days during the talks, including the agreement to establish a committee and a mechanism to end hostilities in Lebanon. All right, so there's a lot to unpack there. Things got worse over the weekend, and then they got better. That's kind of the takeaway here. Expect a lot of this volatility, guys. Now, we got this one from Javier Blas this morning. Javier Blas is one of the chief commodities correspondents with Bloomberg. China's oil imports keep falling and falling in June. The 10-year low set in May. According to Vortexa, June 1st to 20th, imports of crude and condensate are at 5.3 million barrels a day, down more than 50% from pre-war levels, which were about 11.5 million barrels per day. I don't see this as sustainable, and a recovery looms helped by Iranian barrels. So this is pretty important here. Two things. Number one, the Chinese really bit the bullet on this oil crisis. It's one of the reasons why prices didn't rise as aggressively as a lot of people expected. The Chinese ate almost 6 million barrels a day. The Chinese just ate from their own reserves, which are ample, by the way. The Chinese had like 1.4 billion barrels of oil or something to that effect when the war started. So the Chinese ditched a lot of their reserves, as did we, as did a lot of Western countries like Japan. But that's different. During the previous crisis, the Chinese bought and refilled their reserves, adding to global stresses. This time they were helping. But that also means as the Iranian oil starts to flow out of the strait, that oil is not going to relieve pressure on the global market. It's going to go right to relieving the pressure on Chinese reserve dumping, which means it probably won't have a very big impact on market liquidity or price right away, although you will have emotional reaction and people will start looking past short-term shortages onto, you know, what the long-term outlook for the market will be. So you may still have some price relief, but not as much as you might expect. And then we've got this story that's going on in Crimea. This is important here. Ukrainian attacks prompt Russian-held Crimea to halt civilian gas sales. No fuel for 2.4 million people. Officials in Russia-occupied Crimea suspended civilian gasoline sales Sunday as Ukraine ramped up attacks on fuel supplies on the Black Sea Peninsula. Governor Sergei Askianov, ask him how to pronounce his name anyway, the Kremlin-appointed head of Crimea, said that overnight Ukrainian strikes killed four people and wounded 28 others. He did not specify the target of the attack. The target, by the way, was fuel storage facilities in Kerch, as well as a ferry that has been carrying fuel trucks across the waterway. So as they're attacking this highway that feeds into Crimea from the eastern or the western side, they're also attacking maritime sources of fuel on the eastern side. Ukrainians are squeezing the fuel supplies in Crimea here. He later wrote on social media that local gas stations would halt all sales to non-state companies and individuals for an undefined period. Fuel will be sold only to government agencies that ensure the functioning and security of the Republic of Crimea, this guy said. I ask anyone to remain calm and to only trust official sources of information. Again, 2.4 million people unable to buy fuel. That is going to cause problems, guys. And if there's no fuel, that means stores are not getting stocked. That means shortages of everything. Something has got to give in this scenario. And look, this is not to say the war is going to be over tomorrow and there's going to be this great victory for Ukraine, because there is, I'm sure, plenty of fuel and energy shortages in other parts of Ukraine on the other side. But this is the most severe we have seen things on the civilian side in Crimea since the start of this conflict. And it is 100% because of drones, because the Ukrainians had become very adept at drones. And look, the reason why the Strait of Hormuz was closed, the reason why the U.S. effectively lost the war, besides the fact that we were unwilling to target Iranian oil infrastructure, is largely because of drones. Drones have radically changed warfare. And the U.S. is scrambling to catch up in this regard. And so are the militaries all over the world. So expect some major changes coming out of this conflict in the weeks ahead. Something's got to give here. It's just not sustainable. Meanwhile, we had an explosion at a natural gas plant in Qatar over the weekend. It looks like this was not the result of any attack or anything. At least that's the cover story, but it bears mentioning. Qatar domestic gas plant malfunction blast leaves 18 missing, also dozens injured. Qatar said an incident during the startup of the Ras Laffan industrial complex resulted in a blast that has injured dozens, underscoring risks to Middle East energy facilities as they ramp up production after the U.S.-Iran ceasefire. An explosion and fire hit the Barzan local gas supply facility on Sunday, according to operator Qatar Energy. Qatar's interior ministry said in an online post that 54 people were injured in the blast and 18 are missing. The Barzan gas plant feeds domestic industries and power generation, and it's unclear if liquefied natural gas output will be affected. Qatar, the second biggest LNG exporter before the war, halted production of the super-chilled fuel early in the conflict between the U.S. and Iran after attacks on its vast facilities and the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. So they're saying this was an accident during the restart of this facility. That doesn't necessarily indicate any Iranian attacks, but it's also worth pointing out the Iranians hit this facility several times. So it's possible that this accident, if it was an accident, was the knock-on effect of prior strikes on the facility, maybe some damage that went undetected and it flared up when they went to restart the facility. Either way, it doesn't appear that Qatar is trying to slow down the restart of LNG exports for LNG tankers, either owned by Qatar State Shipping Company or under long-term charter with the country, were traveling through Hormuz toward Ras Laffan on Monday, according to ship tracking data compiled by Bloomberg. That's empty LNG tankers going into the Persian Gulf. That's important. That is a sign that the ship owners are expecting further return to normal in the traffic there. Now on to gold. China gold imports surged to most in more than 2 years. China's buying a lot of gold, guys. China's monthly gold imports reached their highest in more than 2 years in May, showing the world's biggest buyer's appetite for bullion remained resilient as prices remained under pressure. Imports were around 163 tons last month, the highest since March of 2024, according to customs data released on Saturday. Volumes for the first 5 months of 2026 were 692 tons, up by about 76% from a year earlier. Chinese demand for physical bullion bars, as well as metal linked to gold accumulation plans, have been among the main drivers of the surge, said some guy I'm not even going to try to pronounce, a researcher at Guangzhou Southern Gold Market Academy. Accumulation plans refer to low barrier products that allow investors to buy gold incrementally. But it's not just in China where they're buying a lot of gold. We've got Hong Kong also making news today. Hong Kong pulls in large gold bars ahead of clearing launch. At least four of the 11 banks participating in Hong Kong's new gold clearing system are importing large bullion bars in preparation for the mechanism's planned launch in July. Traders are receiving orders for some of the clearing banks to move 400-ounce gold bars into the city, according to people familiar with the matter. The bars meet the London Good Delivery Industry Standard, said the people who asked not to be named because they're not authorized to speak. The 400-ounce bars are typically traded by banks and sovereign entities in London, the world's largest bullion trading hub, but are less common in the Asian market, which is dominated by much smaller kilo bars. The bank needs to build up inventories to allow for physical delivery when clearing begins next month, some of the people said. By launching its gold clearing system, Hong Kong could secure first mover advantage in a push to become Asia's preeminent hub for bullion trading. Last week, Singapore announced its own plans to launch a clearing mechanism by the end of the year. So you've got the gold trade is picking up steam in Asia here. Look at the imports in April, 106,500 kilograms of gold versus just 75 in March. So you've got Hong Kong is buying a whole bunch of gold on top of mainland China. Singapore also starting a gold clearing hub. Why suddenly all this Asian interest in buying gold? I think this has to be the knock-on effect of the collapse of the developer market, of the housing collapse in China. People just have nowhere else to put their money. They're certainly not reinvesting in real estate like they did over the last 20 years, watching all that value go up in smoke. They don't really trust stocks or the bond market like they do here in the States or in the West. And so gold is the next logical place where they would put their money. All right, we got a few more here. Microsoft and Chevron signed a 20-year power deal for Texas data center. This is a huge power plant. They haven't completely made up their mind yet, but it looks like it's happening. Chevron signed a 20-year deal with Microsoft to provide natural gas-fired power for a proposed West Texas data center, which could be one of the biggest in the U.S. Project Kilby, as the power plant is named, is expected to provide first power by 2028 and will ramp up to 2.67 gigawatts over time. That's the power of use of a medium-sized city. That's a huge amount of power, Houston-based Chevron said. The oil giant, which is collaborating on the development with investment fund Engine Number One, plans to make a final investment decision later this year, so it's not set in stone here. Chevron's plant will feed cheap gas from the Permian Basin, America's biggest oil field, to several large GE Vernova turbines that will put a data center campus that will power a data center campus that Microsoft plans to build on that site near the city of Pecos, Texas. The project will generate its own power, meaning it will not draw from the grid or involve a local utility, said Jeff Gustafson, Chevron's president of New Energies. That would be that behind-the-meter power that we talked about in one of the videos last week. That just goes to show you guys, 2.7 gigawatts for one project. The power needs, the power bottlenecks here, and this is in 2028. They're expected to start producing power and then ramp up from there, so probably won't be at full power until about 2030. These data center projects are supposedly going to be built way before this power arrives, so how are they going to power them in the meantime? I couldn't tell you. But it's not just power that's a bottleneck. Money is now a bottleneck also. We've got this one from Rohan Paul on X late last week. Goldman Sachs is now saying the AI race has become a $5.3 trillion capital spending cycle, with that figure covering expected hyperscaler spending on AI and data centers from 2025 through 2030. $1 trillion a year. AI infrastructure is starting to strain normal financing channels because the same few hyperscalers cannot endlessly push debt into public bond markets without investors worrying about issuer concentration. And you've got this important line here in yellow. Hyperscale will need financing from across markets, structures, and currencies as they potentially bump up against saturation considerations in liquid credit markets and issuer concentration constraints. All right, so some of you might be saying, what is all this market gobbledygook? What is saturation considerations in liquid credit markets? Saturation in liquid credit markets is when liquid credit markets become illiquid credit markets. It means there's no more money to borrow. They've already borrowed it all. And issuer concentration constraints, it means the average pension plan, 401k, and IRA has already bought so much of this garbage debt that they're not willing to buy anymore. In other words, the AI bubble has borrowed all the money in the freaking world there is to borrow. They have exhausted even the free cash flow, which was substantial, of all the big tech companies. They've used all this off-balance sheet, Enron-like special purpose vehicle financing to try to build out this stuff. And now they are out of ideas, which means they've all got their hand out to the government. It's the only place in the world left to get this kind of money. Expect some kind of preemptive bailout from the government of this AI bubble. And even then, it cannot turn this AI industry into a profit-making industry. It is nothing but a cash-burning industry. It just buys them more time. The collapse of this bubble is inevitable because there is no underlying fundamental value supporting any of it. It's all hype and trust me, broism. All right, we got a few more China headlines to wrap up this one. China slaps restrictions on dozens of U.S. companies. We'll go quick through this one because it's getting kind of late. China has put these restrictions on two U.S. rare earth companies, MP Materials and USA Rare Earths. Those are the two rare earth companies that the federal government has bought stakes in. Now, Chinese companies are not allowed to sell any dual-use technologies, anything that could conceivably be considered as helping the U.S. military. The Chinese won't let their companies sell it to us. So this is another salvo in the trade war being fired here. We do this to them too. We've done this to Baidu and Alibaba recently. We slapped export controls on a lot of their tech companies saying they're not allowed to buy semiconductors. So I'm not surprised to see this move, but this is going on in the backdrop despite all the comments about all these wonderful trade deals were going to be cut. There's still very much an economic war raging between the two superpowers. And another salvo is this story. Soybean prices edge up as China buying returns. Now, soybean prices edge up. Soybeans were up like 0.5% this morning. It's not that big a move in soybeans. But the reason why this is interesting, and this isn't Finimize, the soybeans were up a little bit after the USDA confirmed 132,000 tons in a sale to China for 2026 and 2027 delivery. 132,000 tons, and this is making a headline. That's the story by itself here, that this is even news, because the Chinese historically or average about 27 million tons of soybeans every year purchased from the U.S. before the trade war started. Now here they are announcing 1% of that figure in this story, and it's making headlines. That China buys 1% of what they used to buy from us. Oh my God, it's great. It goes to show you here, guys, U.S. farmers, they took heat for a lot of people here, right? The whole point of the trade war was supposedly to restore American manufacturing, help the American middle class, make us less vulnerable to supply disruptions in the event of war with China. And American farmers were the target for retaliation. And they still are. They're still facing a lot of heat. Farmer bankruptcies are still on the rise domestically. Now you've got higher fertilizer prices, higher fuel prices because of the war in Iran here. So it's a tough time to be a farmer, guys. Thank a farmer if you get a chance for what they do. That is a thankless, merciless business to be in. And I don't have my soundboard with me because I'm on vacation, so we've got no outro music. But I do want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads. And don't forget that like button and that subscribe button on the way out, should you feel so inclined. Thank you also to my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee for supporting the channel. I got links down below in the description, all that good stuff, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.